You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die.
Pixies, Bossa Nova in the room. I have Anne.
Hello.
Rob.
Don't you tell me I'm not over yet.
And on the line I have Kyle.
At last.
Bossa Nova is the third studio album by the American alternative rock band Pixies. It was released on August 13th, 1990 by the English independent label 4AD in the UK and Elektra Records in the US. The producer was Gil Norton, and the genre is alternative rock, space rock, and surf rock. I'm going to read from the book, Mark Blacklock. The cracks had begun to appear by the time Bossa Nova, the pixie dust losing a little of its magic sparkle. Following a second U.S. tour of Doolittle in late 1989, the Pixies took a break, having grown tired of each other's company. During this time, Black Francis went on a solo tour, and Kim Deal formed the Breeders, with whom she would go on to have a number of hits. The band hooked up again in early summer of 1990 and returned to the studio with fifth Pixie Gil Norton. The atmospheric Bossa Nova was released to mixed reviews in the fall of 1990, telling it contained no songs by Deal and had a liberal sprinkling of more gentle surf rock tunes penned by Charles Thompson. Commercially, however, it hit the right notes, reaching number three in the UK album charts and producing a couple of US hits in the shape of Valoria and Dig for Fire. All right, what do we think of Pixies, Bossa Nova?
It's a great record.
It is a very good record.
It's a great record.
It is.
This is one of my favorite records of all time.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, I fucking love this album, and I have for 20 years.
That's incredible. How's it ranking?
I'm not even
in
the biggest Pixies fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I just fucking love this record.
This one ranks. A lot of these songs are on the Peel session, which was my first introduction to
the
Pixies, and it remains my favorite Pixies output. And I think that's pretty consistent across the board. The first Pixies record you heard is your favorite.
Yeah. I've had this discussion of people too, and that works for me. I mean, I got into this record in 2002, and I talked about this before. We were talking about the Triffids, because I was comparing my favorite breakup sad sack music with a friend of mine, Rob. It was Ben Traub, and I tried to push the Triffids on him, and he was like, "Well, I don't like this production." And he pushed this record on me, and I was like, this is incredible. This album cut me like a knife. I love this record. I love the production. I love the huge guitars, the beginning of Valoria that sounds like a ominous spaceship like coming in.
A Thurman.
Wow, a lot of Thurman on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, this record, this record does something for me, and it hit me at a certain time in my life, but it's never let go. This is absolutely one of my favorite rock records.
Amazing. So
wonderful.
Are you saying that it's a breakup album? Not in just in the sense of the like Pixies were breaking up, but to listen to after
The way I perceived it. I mean, just those sharp ass guitars and Digging for Fire, which sounds like such a desperate thing to do. And Valoria, which is just haunting. The whole That's kind of the main theme I got from this record, was like longing and haunting. And like I said, I'm obviously bringing my own.
I mean, there's a lot of detachment going on in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like, I love how this is a very weird and very Pixies album, but like some of the detachment stuff, like I like it and I'm interested by it, but I think it hits with me a little bit less than like Surfer Rosa or Doolittle because they feel a little bit more like engaged. Mm-hmm. Like one of the reviews I read said that it's like an album, this one in Trompe Le Monde, are like albums that don't care if you listen to them, like, which is fine. Sure. Cause I really like it. I have spent less time with this than the earlier two.
Yeah.
And half like the earlier stuff. So.
And based on our, your favorite Pixies record might be the one that you heard first. Mm-hmm. What was the first Pixies record that you
I don't heard remember to? If it was Surfer Rosa or Doolittle.
This one. This is not my favorite.
Breaking the spell.
Yeah, Surfer Rosa is my favorite.
Combo still. Breaker.
Analytical nightmare.
Yeah.
This one, I agree with the detached sentiment. This has the sort of malaise that can kind of, I don't know. It still has the big, soft aspect of
loud,
the,
quiet, loud. Yeah,
loud, quiet, loud. Dynamics. But it is not immediate like the ruckusness of something like Surfer Rosa. The sharpness of this is, I don't know if I'd say more mature, but it's mellowed out. It's like a fine wine.
Yeah,
it's been mellowed, but. Part of me just really loves the I don't know, punk energy of the early ideas.
Okay, I get that. And we got Anna in our ears right now, and this is not my favorite version of the song, but my favorite version is the John Peel sessions. I need everyone to just put down what they're doing and listen to the Peel sessions. Yeah. And then go back and listen to this and be like, oh, shit, okay. For whatever the fuck it's worth, like, yeah. I love so many of these songs, but I prefer them on the live aspect, which I would I mean, and in this, in the fact that the Pixies were doing live sessions with John Peel, I don't think I'm entirely out of line with,
yeah, maybe they learned
how it sounded.
Yeah, I will say, it was very strange, you know, doing this album. And it's very possible that they learned how to play the songs better by the time they recorded that John Peel session, because it said that this one, they did a few demo recordings.
Like 2 weeks of working on it, yep. Right?
2 weeks of working on it. The rehearsals were not as, you know, thorough as the other records that they had put together. And so... to me, it does signify, when you listen to this album, think about that. You know, they were saying, hey, the lyrics were written on napkins sometimes before. Yeah. It felt a bit rushed. It feels a bit like not as completely thought out in the way that the songs are, just compared to those other albums, but I still feel like it's so strong. They're such a strong band.
Well, they're like masters of their sound, and they know what they're doing. So it's incredible. But I do think you can, for me, I can do, in the energy level, I can hear the difference between we were playing this over and over again to get ready versus like them sort of starting to fall apart and do it more in a different way, right?
I think this solidified Black Francis's stranglehold on the concept of like, this is my band.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, so many of his guitar parts are just almost stream of consciousness. Like, they sound great, but it sounds so weird coming over, like he's just noodling over like the lead vocals. Yeah. But it still sounds great, you know?
Yeah.
I love this record.
I mean, yeah, it's not that I don't like it. It's just not the same for me as some of that more energetic stuff, I guess. Yeah.
So how many tracks did Kim Deal actually get to pen? Two?
On this?
Zero. No,
zero.
In the entirety of their catalog.
Oh.
I think it's two.
No. She had a couple on, I believe, Surfer Rosa and a couple on Doolittle.
I mean, she had Gigantic.
Yeah.
And then I think one more. The only reason why I bring it up is that the review that you read was so like, well, Kim Deal's not anywhere to be found on this thingamajig, like with her writing prowess.
Right.
And I don't think that she was ever really like, she might have been given a co-writer record or a couple of times, but like I think Gigantic is the only one that she actually has like, this is a thing that I did.
Oh, official writing credits? Is that what you're trying to get at?
But if they were writing this as a band practicing for months and months versus like writing it.
Always listen to Black Francis. It's the rest of the band never got any fucking like anything. It's always been Frank Black's thing. So
I guess what I'm saying is that I feel like if there's longer writing sessions that are focused on getting things right together as a band, then that means that someone was more of a contributing writer than we have to punch this out quickly and Francis is in charge, right?
Sure. And yeah, that makes sense. But I don't think they ever really had that.
Yeah, you're right. Silver and Gigantic are the ones that she is noted as having writing credits.
Yeah. So the concept that she was somehow like that her input was really important to a Pixies record is only insofar as she had two songs that were credited to her.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that the credit is not the entirety of what makes up a song being written.
Yeah, this is you're coming at it from a completely different. She's completely detached from the band at this time.
Like they all moved to LA without her while she was doing the Breeders thing in London, like recording their first album. They were like far from her, right? Whereas the other albums, they all together as a band spent time practicing and writing the songs, even if Black Francis is credited for all of them. Does that make sense?
Yes. She was actively engaged. Yeah. She was not actively
engaged.
She's
not engaged in this at all.
Yep. Okay. Like,
she played on it and she did write the parts that she's playing, but at the same time, it's like he was like, here's the songs, and she was like, I guess we'll do one more, you know, or we'll keep going because the band's making money, you know. It's like she wants to be in the band and you know, it's like working with someone that you don't want to work with, obviously, at that point. Whereas before, I think she was like, well, we can make it work. Like, I love touring. I'm sure she was getting, you know, money from albums and touring and stuff like that. But at this point, I mean, he knows that he's hard to work with too. He has no, what would you say?
Compunction.
Yeah.
About it.
He knows this is like self-destruction on his part to push this and to be as controlling as he is, but I don't think he can help it because he just wants to.
He wants to make the thing.
To do it, yeah. I mean, this, it's got the quirks, but not as quirky. It falls a little more in the pop element side of things. It doesn't have the surrealist lyrics as much, or maybe they're just not as memorable on this.
It sounds tired.
I mean, what? It kind of does.
It sounds like
stormy weather, though, and
I don't get this vibe at all.
Yeah.
I think you guys are just tired. Is it because it's the first day of fall?
It's just some of them. No, fall energizes me. But even like Stormy Weather, I think, is great because it's got this like really brilliant drag and then it like kicks into it. So it's like self-aware drag, right? Like they're purposefully, I think that some of that detached sound is like, or I mean, I think it's all on purpose. Like I think they're making it sound like that. It's just not as... And in some ways, it's more rock and roll, too, but it's just not, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Garsh, I like this record a lot.
I mean, I like Dig for Fire. I think
it's good. Digging for Fire, oof. The Happening is one of my favorite Pixies songs. Rob, when I first moved to Bloomington, we had to do a Pixies cover show.
Yep.
I was like, I want to do The Happening.
That's a great song.
That was my first pick.
Yep.
Awesome. So would you say that the Peel sessions are more energetic?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, sure, yeah. I mean, they're more like a live show.
Rock me, Alberto Santiago. As opposed to Rock Me Joe. Joseph Alberto Santiago. Is what outside of this record, I can tell you a fun fact. That the 1990...
You sound tired now.
I've always been tired.
No. Get it going, Rob.
Hey, yeah. Outside of this thing, I can tell you a fun fact. It's the 1990 Select Magazine end of year list. And of that, in 1990, Pixies is number one of Bossa Nova. And of all of those things, we actually have 15 albums out of their top 50 that exist in this book.
Wow.
15.
Dang.
15. So Select was pretty fucking good. As far as like, top 50 and like what I didn't do the percentage. Damn it, I should have done the fucking percentage.
30%?
Hey, 30%!
Yeah, 15 out of 50.
Yeah, and but they're in the fucking 1001 best records of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty goddamn good. Yeah. Pretty good.
A good eye on what will last.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that might also have a lot to say with what was going on in 1990.
Maybe.
It's a watershed moment in history.
But I still feel like maybe Kim was right to do the Breeders. I mean, to leave and do the Breeders.
I mean, if you dickheads want to join the Patreon and listen to our episode on the Breeders, Birch is 100% correct. Kim was right to do the Breeders.
Yeah. Pod.
Pod. And Wes. God damn.
Splash. Or
yeah.
Amazing albums.
They are... two of the best records that came out in the 1990s
that are not that this book
is just fucking ignored.
Yeah,
for teenager of the goddamn year.
Yeah,
which has its moments, but it's quite simply it does not do the service to Kim Deal's like output that it needs to.
Yeah,
and yeah. She was 100% right to, like, jump, because it was, what's her nuts from wherever.
Didn't say what.
All right. Well, fix it for me in post and tell me who I mean.
What's her nuts from wherever?
Oh, this yeah, kinda, of course.
Kelly Deal?
The content.
No, not Kelly Deal. The lady in Britain that she was recording with, we've discussed her output here already, and I can't remember her name. God damn it.
Tanya Donnelly?
Yeah, Tanya fucking Donnelly.
From Belly?
Belly.
Yeah, who's
and Throwing Muses.
Throwing Muses, thank you so much. Yeah, so that's why Pod exists. They got along so well, they decided to hang out and record a record like while everyone went and lived in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim Deal eventually went out there and did the record. But yeah, this does not really sound much like she had any input.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Judging from his solo records, later records, this is almost a Frank Black album.
Concur.
Yeah. Valoria, like, just...
it's got mad power, right?
Yeah, Valoria, like I said, it's like a giant spaceship appears above overhead. It just stops my blood. It's so beautiful and big.
It's definitely, I feel like it's like a spacey, deserty album. I mean, I guess the space thing is more, I guess that's not as much in the other ones, right?
I mean, that's what attracted me to it. It's just kind of like the cold, removed, spaciness of it.
Well, the atomic, and, like that goes with the surf stuff, right?
And yeah, and the surf stuff and the stream of consciousness, like guitar.
Talking about Area 51 and UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. This album's just does something for me.
I mean, I definitely really like it. And I haven't spent as much time with this as the other ones. So that's probably like, it's not like I'm going to continue to listen to this. Like.
No, but it's possible if somebody would have dropped like Trump Lamont on my lap at the same time, you know, maybe that would have been my record.
It'd be an interesting because
I at that point when I got into this, I Rob and I had definitely been listening to the Peel sessions, like driving around in cars, and it was heavily scratched, if I remember correctly, Rob.
Very much so. It was bad with CDs.
It was unlistenable.
Sometimes, yes.
You need to get you a Birch who digitizes them for you.
When Frank Black was asked about his music, he said, those are the two basic components of rock music, the dreamy side, the rockin' side. It's always either been sweaty or laid back and cool. We don't try to be dynamic, but it's Dumbo Dynamics because we don't know how to do anything else. We can play loud or quiet. That's it.
That's cool. That's I respect cool. the hell yeah. out of that. Yeah. I only like to stand up or lie down. I don't like sitting.
There you go.
So that's probably why I fucking love the Pixies. Yeah. Because those are my modes.
And then I did find it interesting. There are a couple songs that people pointed out that, I mean, his lyrics or what the songs are about are just kind of all over the place. They said Valoria it's a folklore based about the Rosicrucians in the 1920s.
A mystical fraternal order yeah. and the biggest group of them in the modern era is based in San Jose, California.
Yeah.
They start in the 17th century in Europe.
Yeah.
Speaking of the biggest group of them.
Uh-huh.
The biggest poop of them. Weezer covered Valoria and it sounded exactly like the Pixies version. They changed
yeah.
absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it was the really production, stupid.
It sounds like Weird Al. It sounds like the exact same goddamn thing.
It's the same thing they did with the Toto song. And I was like,
yeah.
why did you even bother?
Why would you just bills. Not even?
Yeah, I guess so.
They totally love dollar bills.
They love dollar bills.
Allison was a tribute to American jazz pianist, vocalist Moe's Allison. Major influence on R&B, the Rolling Stones, The Who regularly featured a version of Allison's song, Young Man Blues. Anna is a song about surfing. Obviously, they always have like kind of surfing or surf rock songs. I had no idea, though, if you look at the first letters of each line, it spells surfer.
It's an acrostic.
Acrostic. Oh, boy. She's my fave.
Nerd alert.
Undressing in the sun.
That's hilarious.
Return to sea. Forgetting everyone. 11 high. Ride the wave. Surfer.
Hilarious.
I yeah. love it.
Do any of y'all know about the Surf Tones? That's the opener is like, it's a cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about the Surf Tones.
Yeah, the Surf Tones.
Frosty Horton and Steve Hoffman.
Yeah, so Ben, if Ben was here right now, he'd be like, yeah, of course the Surf Tones, because they are a, you know, very good surf rock band. And I loved that. I loved that they were an homage to the sort of music that they, you mm-hmm. know, are playing. But obviously Pixies are a spin on
the I mean, that rock. Like that track is just like, feels so cool. Like I was listening to this in the car a lot and I was just like, I'm cool. Yeah. Like, Scott, it's a great opener for the album. It like really sets a good tone for it. From the distant star to this year ball, the moon, the you, where are we now? Who laid the blues of everyone? Allison. Smile around the world. He took no fright and jettison.
Bossa Nova reached number 70 on Billboard 200. Album peaked at number 3 in the UK album charts. Two singles, obviously, Valoria, Dig for Fire, both charted on modern rock tracks at number 4 and 11, respectively.
Mm.
So it did okay. No. It wasn't like it came out and people completely abandoned it.
Did it do the best?
No.
Okay.
No, that was definitely Doolittle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a weird time.
Yeah, it was, man. I'm going to spin you a yarn of Robert Christgau.
Ooh.
Bossa Nova. Though the words are less willful, they're still mostly indecipherable without the crib sheet and still mostly incomprehensible with it. Leisure, class kitties, grasping at straws. Or women, Black Francis has gone through 3 girlfriends by cut 5, as the solar system bangs and whimpers to a halt. But these collegians and obscuristans no longer, announcing their newfound religious faith with a surf metal instrumental, quote, God damn it. Cicelyn, who's not a girlfriend, though Francis loves her best of all. They march out tunes so simple and confident, and power riffs so grandly declamatory that you learn to understand the choruses by singing them. The beats are lively. The 3-minute songs don't bash you over the head with their pop punk brevity, neither do the two minute songs. If they weren't still a little gothic surrealist, they might even be too easy. But they ain't.
It's a good review.
Incredible.
Obscurantists. Yeah. Is what I meant to
with
say.
With an N? That's wild.
Yeah, it is.
Is that
wild.
A real word? I guess it doesn't matter. I know what he means.
There's not a weird squiggle underneath it, so yes, it's a real word.
I will say Santiago's playing is just. And the drumming.
I can't be fucked with, man.
So good.
They're so good at what they're doing. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to rip on this album. I totally enjoy it. And, like, yeah.
Yeah. I also think it's funny that they were like, Gil Norton, come on back, after they had such a, you know, hard time, like, kind of getting him on board with their sound. But obviously something must have clicked at the end of Doolittle that they invited him back and... you know, recording with him again, and they continue to work with him. So,
yeah, I love the production on this record.
I do too. I think he does a great job.
Everything's crisp and big and bright.
Yeah. It sounds really good.
Okay. What do we think?
Into it.
Positive.
I will listen again. Yeah. Maybe because I didn't hear this first, this is not my favorite one.
Fair enough.
But
yeah,
I'll keep going back to it probably.
Not total positive. I love the whole damn record.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm coming back to this album to the day I die. I love this record.
That's a good point. You're saying solid record, and there's you're right. All the songs are good. I didn't notice one that I was like,
there's no songs
I
wouldn't listen
song.
To again.
Yeah,
nope.
Yeah. So
there's not a song that sounds out of place.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
This is the Pixies and it sounds great. Right.
This is definitely Free Black.
I mean, but yeah.
Would we say this is, you know, out of the three, the Surfer Rosa, you know, Doolittle, Bossa Nova, is this the most consistent? Because it might be for me.
Ooh.
I think
it might be.
That might be true, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it does feel like it's a whole cloth piece very, like, firmly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This does seem,
As somebody
like a
who's never
vision.
Put on a Frank Black record.
Oh, you just wait.
Is this in the book?
Yeah, Danger of the Year, 100%, man.
Yeah.
You're going to have to listen to some Frank Black.
Yeah.
But this seems a singular vision, for sure. And that's on purpose.
Yep.
And I'm not going to deny the fact that Frank Black is a wonderful songwriter.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next time we'll be talking about Megadeth. Rust in peace. All right. Thanks, y'all.